Well, it is one of the most anticipated comebacks in musical history. Tonight, lads, in Cardiff, Oasis are going to take the stage at the Principality Stadium. So roll with it, folks, because today's podcast, see what we just did there? Yep, all about the 90s, brotherly feuds and the lure of box office mega bucks for this tour. It's News Talk Daily. I am Ciara Doherty. And I don't know about you, but I, for one, wasn't sure if I would ever see Noel and Liam Gallagher mend their differences, get back on the stage side by side and perform for a huge global tour.
Amen.
Well, joining me today to discuss this and to take a deep dive into the world of Oasis are Simon Maher from 8radio.com and Oasis Uber fan, I think it's fair to say. Shauna O'Reilly, who you'll all know from the Showbiz News slot on Today FM Breakfast Show, and for the fact that you actually cried on air, Shauna.
I did, embarrassingly.
I'm just going to confront the elephant in the room
here. I wept.
From the get-go. You're both very welcome to the podcast, folks. I should point out, Shauna, you actually cried on air when you heard that Oasis were going to reform. You weren't just crying just because.
I always cry. No. It was that news specifically, yeah, that got me.
She's really crying. Oh, Shauna. We didn't need this earlier on, so let's play it now.
We've talked about this for so long. And this is going to be the biggest moment of the last 100 years. I don't know.
It was that sense of what? Excitement? Relief?
I just couldn't believe that I was going to see it happen. Like you mentioned there, I wondered would they ever mend the broken bridges? And I couldn't believe that it was happening. There had been so much build up and there had been so much back and forth and will they, won't they? And, you know, and then it was real and it was happening and they were coming to Dublin and we're going to it, you know, so it's so exciting. Yeah.
Simon, if you were an alien from Mars, right, and you landed today on planet Earth and you had to describe Oasis, who they are or what they are, what would you say?
I think people, when they think about Oasis, they realise that they were a big band of the 1990s and they really did reign supreme over a lot of the Britpop world and all the hoary rock and roll that followed. But it's only when you see things like the photographs from Nebworth or you see the amount of copies of albums that they sold is that they were huge. They were like properly huge. And even up to the time when the split happened and perhaps their influence had started to wane a bit, they were still one of the biggest bands in the world. And at a certain point in the mid to the late 1990s, I would speculate that they were the biggest band in the world, particularly on the live scene for quite some time.
Give us the numbers then.
Well, OK, so yeah, in terms of us, and it was funny because I only went back to this over the last couple of days to see even about streaming, because everybody talks about streaming now as being the main metric that they have. And when I looked at the stats for Oasis, they were currently running at about 12 billion streams, which is quite a lot. And when you see so many artists who are struggling to get their 1,000 streams to get paid from Spotify, to be getting 12 billion streams, you know that you are doing well in there. When you go back way back to 1995, so some might say was their first UK number one single in April, they played in 1996. They played to 250,000 people in Nebworth as well. When they released even Be Here Now, so that little bit later on in 1997, it became the fastest selling record in Britain of all time at the time. So this sort of number, the scale, you know, the scale that they were managing at that stage was unsurpassed by anybody else, you know, and the idea that you had a band in the very traditional rock and roll mold who were able to do that, that really, really was something. So they weren't just a big band, they were a huge band.
And they were more really than just a band, weren't they? I mean, they had such an influence on the music of the time, obviously, but on the fashion of the time. It was a look to be into Oasis. That's what I remember. Bucket hats, parkas, combat.
Oh, yeah.
Zippy uppies, yeah. Adidas, top to toe.
generally being mad for it. That was the idea that you had to be for this. But yeah, no, there really was a whole flash thing. And when you would walk around, and even when you see, and those famous pictures, and I love the pictures of Nebworth, is that you're looking at people who are pretty much 250,000 people dressed the same. You know, they all have the Adidas zippies. They're all wearing the parkas. No matter what the heat, no matter what the temperature is, they all have the same haircut and they're all walking around with their hands crossed behind their back. And this was a big, big part of it as well. They were a cultural phenomenon just as much as they were a musical phenomenon. And so many people were part of the Oasis Collective. And that was, yeah, it was how you look. It was also, of course, how you talk. And there was a particular attitude to it as well from the very, very start. And even though, in my view, Noel was the one with so much of the talent, Liam was the one with the rock and roll swagger. And that's something that's incredibly rare.
I mean, when you think of it, the album, right, definitely maybe burst onto the scene. I think it was August 1994, yes, wasn't it? And then What's the Story, Morning Glory was the following year, October of 1995. Such a short space of time. And I looked just last night, I was looking at all the songs, Roll With It, Wonderwall, Look Back in Anger, Some Might Say, Cast No Shadow, She's Electric, Morning Glory, Champagne Supernova, Live Forever, Columbia Supersonic, Cigarettes and Alcohol. Like, these were tunes, these were bangers.
Oh, absolutely. Like, you know, as bands go, and if Oasis just come back and do their live gigs and literally just do their greatest hits as a set with a couple of album tracks, people will go home extremely happy from this because there are so many very, very big songs. But I suppose when you think with a band like Oasis, what probably surprised people just as much as the fact that they kept on producing records was the fact that the whole thing held together for far longer, perhaps even than people realise. There was 16, 17 years of Oasis before it all really, really fell to pieces. So there was a lot of time to get a lot of albums out. But I suppose some might say, if you pardon the pun, was that their real, real main peak time was that sort of 94 to 97, maybe 98 period, you know. But of the songs that they released across three albums there is more than enough to fill any stadium set, and there's more than enough to justify your 12 billion streams.
94 to 97, right, that was the peak. That's when we all got to know these songs, and this is when we all started to walk and talk like Liam Gallagher and to dress as I described earlier. Shauna, you're a little bit young, right, to have been there at the peak. So when did you come to Oasis?
Well, I have a shocking confession to make, which is that in the 90s, I was a Boyzone fan. So the Oasis thing kind of passed me by. I was a little young for it. I was more into pop music. But it was when I went to college in the early noughties, I started getting into the Stone Roses and the Manchester scene. And then I discovered Oasis properly as an adult. And I was hooked immediately. I love the two boys. I love them. Love their music. Love everything about Oasis.
Why? What is it? What gripped you?
The music, first of all, is brilliant. And I think you will get goosebumps listening to any Oasis track. I can't wait to see so many of those tracks live. I've never seen them live. I've seen the brothers separately about six times each. But together, to see and hear those songs is going to be magical. There's something about an escape from reality. When you go to a gig like that, you're putting on your parka. I have one, by the way, and I will wear it. I have also bought a red Adidas zip up to wear to the gig in Dublin. I've never worn one in my life before, but I'm putting it on. So it's almost like you're assuming this identity for the gig. You're getting into the swing of it. I'm not particularly wild. Like, I have a good time. But when I am at a Liam Gallagher gig or a Noel Gallagher gig or I'm at Oasis, I am absolutely mad for it. So I think that's part of the appeal. You can just really get into it and go bananas for 2 hours.
Is it nostalgia?
Mm.
Is it that sort of bringing you back to your carefree youth, those glory days where you lived for hanging out with your mates and going to concerts?
I think so too. And I also believe that, you know, it was a time before mobile phones and technology. And I think that has a big part to play in it because, you know, we look back with rose-tinted glasses and we go, they were the great days when, you know, 160,000 people were jumping in the air and nobody had their phones out. And I think the band were big enough to hold that crowd for that long without phones. And, you know, it just, that's part of it, I think. Definitely nostalgia. And the 90s are huge now. Everybody wants to be back in the 90s and they're dressing like the 90s. And we were there the first time, you know.
90s were class.
They were.
Just so you're all aware, the 90s is where it was at. Okay, I need to take a moment here. I misremembered how happy I was back in that decade. Freedom. There are those, though, Simon, right, who would say that Oasis are absolutely overrated. You know, they talk about their influences being the Beatles. I think that's a little, I mean, it doesn't surprise me that Noel Gallagher wants to associate himself with the Beatles. Who wouldn't? They're not in that space, are they, in terms of their songwriting capacity?
No, I think there's like a million bands out there who obviously wanted to sound like the Beatles and obviously wanted to emulate everything that the Beatles did. But I think it would be unfair on Noel in particular to say that, because of the fact that they had the ability, and you mentioned it earlier on, the bangers that they were able to write, the songs that they were able to write, particularly in that first 7 or 8 years of Oasis Land, definitely are stuff that elevates them above so many copycat bands that were out there. I think one of the reasons where people sort of tend to have a problem is the swagger. They kind of begrudge the swagger and they begrudge the attitude. But this is rock and roll and it's the way it's supposed to be.
You have to act like a bit of a swagger.
But the swagger is absolutely fine as long as you can back it up with the songs. And Oasis were in a position where they were able to, for a good number of years, back it up with really, really good songs. And even though they wore their influences on their sleeves, like, you knew that they loved the Beatles, you knew that they loved the Kinks, you knew that they loved the Jam. There's nothing wrong with those. Three amazing, amazing bands. And they didn't sound like an identikit of any of them. They sound like they're influenced by them. But there is nothing wrong with them being influenced by these things, as long as what you're doing is converting that into really good songs to the end. And that is what they were able to do.
My memory of Oasis 2 was always dissing other bands. I remember this interview with Bonehead where he was calling the Manix boring intellectuals. Remember that? It was just so insulting. And I actually saw the Manix once and thought, you might be on something here. I'm a bit bored. But their big feud, of course, was with Blur, this battle of the bands, battle of Britpop. Ultimately, who do you think won that? And was that all manufactured to drive publicity and to drive sales?
Well, if you ask any music nerd who won the Battle of the Britpop, they'll always tell you it was Pulp. But outside of that, probably the band that has lived on most has been Blur, in that they had, I suppose, a longevity that other bands definitely didn't have. And that perhaps Oasis started to burn out. But again, with music, there's nothing wrong with burning out as long as you sort of burn brightly while you're there. So while perhaps Blur were the winners of the Britpop thing, I think Oasis at the time, while they weren't necessarily a band that were immediately comparable to Blur, I think they jumped in and they enjoyed, and everybody really enjoyed, the battle that existed at the time. And while perhaps even the biggest part of the battle wasn't with the two bands' best singles or best albums ever, is that the fact that they did it and the fact that everybody bought in onto it. And I'm sure at the time, there may well have been some real animosity that was going on between the two bands. But really, in the end, I think everybody knew that, look, this is all part of the game. This is rock and roll. And this is the wild ride that we live on.
Speaking about feuds, we have to obviously look at the feud between the two brothers, because that surely overshadowed any other feud that they had with other bands. In what way do you think it impacted their trajectory? I mean, were they on the way out regardless, Shauna?
I believe so. I mean, 2009, you know, they had just done Slain. I believe they did Slain in the June and then they broke up in the August. And I remember the reports of Slain were mixed reviews. I think there was a lot of tension backstage. Seen since in Supersonic and the documentaries about that time, things were really, really bad between the two brothers in particular, which probably made life miserable for everybody involved in the band. So I definitely think things were going to come to a head at some point. And it's probably happened in the best possible way for them. You know, they went off, they blew off some steam, and now they can kind of return and return to glory days.
And what led to the feud, do you think, Simon? Because I think originally I thought this feud again was all about generating press coverage and column inches. But in the end, if you watch the Supersonic documentary, and I have, you can see that there was tension and animosity between them. Was it about control ultimately?
A large part of it was, but a large part of it you have to remember as well is with any band, when you live in close proximity with somebody, and particularly when it's siblings, when there is that whole sibling rivalry thing going on, it's always going to be something that's going to cause tensions, and those tensions are going to increase. And but there's also tends to be a correlation then that goes between how those tensions build and perhaps how successful your last album was. And as you say quite rightly, when you watch it in Supersonic, you'll see that this is not something that has just been generated for press. This was something that was really, really going on. And I have to say, I was amazed that they lasted until 2009. Like, for any band, but particularly for any brothers, and any brothers who are both such big personalities in their own way, to be able to hold that together for 16, 17 years, that was pretty impressive. So I was impressed and surprised that it got that far.
Liam was always cooler than me, I think. Clothes looked better on him, and he was taller, and he had better haircut, and he was funnier. Liam clearly would have liked to have had my talent as a songwriter.
I can't be singing the songs for you because it's all fucked, you know what I mean? Sorry, you know what I mean, but I can't, isn't it?
Probably caning it too much, screaming and shouting. I thought, oh, singing them songs the way I sing them is like being in a boxing match. It takes its wear and tear.
You know what I mean?
But as Shauna said as well, the idea that they were then able to go off and blow off some steam, but probably realizing then is that, look, there's something here that's more than what we can do separately, that there's something, it's more than the sum of its part. And I've no doubt that that resentment is still there. That is something that is continuing and will go on forever. But the fact that they have managed to make peace to the level where they were able to say that this whole, the reunion was no big moment, just the realization that it was time. And I think that's a very honest view to take on it. And I think both of them have known that forever, but it's the realization of, okay, look, we're going to have to be able to work together here.
I'm a wee bit more cynical, I have to say, Shauna. I mean, I did Noel's divorce and think, Kerching, that was pretty costly, Noel. Is this just a money making scheme, sort of a shameless attempt to build up that retirement fund?
Well, I'd say that's part of it, to be fair. The bank balance has taken a hit with the divorce. But, you know, having been to so many Liam's gigs over the last couple of years, he has been so blatant about the fact that he misses his brother, misses being on stage with his brother. He's actually been able to compliment his brother's songwriting abilities. And I think definitely that maybe as they got older and as they softened a little, because I think Liam has definitely softened over the years, that maybe it became more apparent, you know, let's put this behind us. I'm sure the millions and billions that they'll make out of it will absolutely help things. I would like to believe it's rooted in love. Am I a fool? Probably.
I'm not going to call you a fool, but I will let our listeners come to their own conclusion. I think it's 50 million.
Yeah, okay, fair enough.
They're going to make. I mean, look, would that encourage me to bury the hatchet? I think it probably would, actually. I've seen loads of speculation online over the last couple of days about their set list, right? It seems to me that fans are literally sitting outside the Principality Stadium in Cardiff and are listening to the rehearsals.
Yeah.
And thankfully, they seem to be doing the hits.
Yeah.
I'm not here for new material. I don't want to know.
Nobody
that.
Is.
Nobody
no.
is. Okay, so just give us the hits. What do you want to hear?
Okay, so I want to hear Acquiesce. I want to hear them singing that line, because we need each other. Like, to me, that's a kind of full circle moment. The two brothers singing, because we need each other. Like, that would just be magical. Like, it's giving me goosebumps even thinking about it now.
Shauna is currently dancing.
I am.
The studio. Just want to put that out there.
And I'm sorry for the poor singing as well. But yeah, look, I think once I hear Morning Glory, Slide Away, I'd love to hear Columbia.
It's not on the list.
Is it not?
It's not on the list.
Oh no. You see, I'm wondering, are they going to lock in with the one set list, or are they going to change it up for each gig? I don't know. I'd like to hear Columbia.
Okay, between now and August, we're putting a play out there.
Please
play Columbia. I mean, there was perhaps an expectation that, given the fact that they haven't performed together since, what, 2009, that they might play a smaller gig or a few intimate gigs, just, you know, test things out, Simon, but they're not doing that. This is a massive stadium launch.
I think there's 41 gigs that are slated in so far for this. Like, Rock and Roll Star is one of my favorite Oasis tunes. This is very much going to be the theme of this, is that they could have done, the intimate gigs. They could have done the smaller gigs. But I think there is still very much a belief and something that they'll want to project, that we are bigger. We're bigger than everybody else. So even though we haven't played a gig since 2009, we're coming back and we're doing the biggest venues in the world. And that's all there is to it. And I think that's always going to be the way for a band like Oasis. They were never going to, I suppose, sneak back onto the stage or make a subtle reappearance, no matter what they did, was always going to be huge. And when you think they're doing places like Heaton Park in Manchester, those gigs are going to be fab. Wembley, Murrayfield, and obviously Croke Park then in Dublin as well. You know, if you're going to come back big, come back with the big songs. And I think everybody knows what they can expect on the nights there. And I think it is going to be, there's something about it that this is not going to be a voyage of discovery that we're going to be on. This is going to be a night of rediscovery and nostalgia.
The word subtlety and Oasis, I don't think I've ever read in the same sentence, to be honest. Sean, I know you're going to the gigs in Dublin in August, but you're going to lean into the Oasis vibes tonight when the first gig gets underway in Cardiff.
Yeah, I'm going to have the girls over and we're going to put on some Oasis and have a few drinks and just try and refresh, you know, X and TikTok and see what's happening live from Cardiff. Yeah.
All while wearing your red zip.
Absolutely.
Obviously.
Yeah.
Sean O'Reilly and Simon Marr, you've got me in the mood for the return of Oasis to Dublin next month. That's if the brothers can stay friends for that long.
Don't even say it.
Don't jinx it. I've just got a sharp pointed finger from Shauna there. No, it's going to happen. Thanks so much for being here today on News Talk Daily. That's it for another week. We'll be back with a fresh News Talk Daily to start your week bright and early on Monday morning. And if you missed out on any of our podcasts, you can always catch up over the weekend. Check out the Go Loud player. You'll find them all there. Until the next time, from me, Ciara Doherty, have a great weekend.